Greetings, and welcome to the Profound Medical Corp. First Quarter 2019 Financial Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Steve Kilmore, with Profound Medical. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Stacey. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start by pointing out that this conference call will include forward-looking statements regarding Profound and its business, which may include, but is not limited to, expectations regarding the efficacy of Profound's technology in the treatment of prostate cancer, BPH, uterine fibroids, and palliative pain. Often, but not always, forward-looking statements can be identified by the use of words such as plans, is expected, expects, scheduled, intends, contemplates, anticipates, believes, proposes, or variations, including negative variations of such words and phrases, or state that certain actions, events, or results may, could, would, might, or will be taken, occur, or be achieved. Such statements are based on the current expectations of management. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed in this conference call may not occur by certain specified dates or at all, and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the company, including risks regarding the medical device industry, economic factors, the equity markets generally, and risks associated with growth and competition. Although Profound has attempted to identify important factors that could cause actual actions, events, or results to differ materially from those described in forward-looking statements, there may be other factors that cause actions, events, or results to differ from those anticipated, estimated, or intended. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Profound undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, other than as required by law. On the call today representing the company are Dr. Arun Menawat, Profound's Chief Executive Officer, and Aaron Davidson, the company's Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Corporate Development. With that said, I'll now turn the call over to Aaron.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our first quarter 2019 conference call. On behalf of the management team and everyone at Profound, I would like to thank you for your ongoing interest in our company. For those of you who are shareholders, we appreciate your continued support. I will turn the call over to Arun in a moment for an update on our operational and strategic activities. However, before I do, I'd like to provide a brief update on our first quarter 2019 financial results. To streamline things, all of the numbers I will discuss have been rounded and are therefore approximate. For the three-month period ended March 31st, 2019, the company recorded revenue of $1.5 million with $1.3 million from the sale of products and $128,000 from installation and training services. First quarter 2019 revenue increased more than threefold, from $376,000 in the first quarter of 2018. Expenditures for R&D increased $161,000 for the 3 months ended March 31, 2019, compared to the same period in 2018. Materials purchased increased by $489,000 due to increased spending and testing on R&D projects, and investment tax credits decreased by $60,000 because of lower eligibility for refundable tax credits. Offsetting these amounts were decreases in clinical trial costs, consulting fees, and rent of $333,000, $52,000 and $38,000 respectively. Depreciation expense increased by $28,000, partly due to the adoption of IFRS 16 with the depreciation of the right of use assets. G&A expenses for the first quarter of 2019 were higher by $211,000 compared to the 3 months ended March 31st, 2018. Salaries and benefits increased by $195,000. This was offset by a decrease in rent and office and other of $15,000 and $18,000 respectively. Depreciation expenses increased by $74,000, partly due to the aforementioned adoption of IFRS 16. Overall, the company recorded a first quarter 2019 net loss of $2.9 million, or 3 cents per common share, compared with a net loss of $4.9 million, or 6 cents per common share, for the same period, same three-month period in 2018. As of March 31st, 2019, Profound had cash of $27 million. I'll now turn the call over to Arun.
Thank you, Aaron. I'd like to start with the regulatory update we provided this afternoon in conjunction with the release of our first quarter 2019 financial results. We were pleased to announce that we have submitted our 510K application for pre-market clearance with the U.S. FDA and that the application had cleared the FDA's acceptance review. This means that the submission contains all the necessary elements and information for the agency to proceed to a substantive review. Even though we filed the 510K application some weeks ahead of schedule, since this is a novel therapy with significant clinical data, we anticipate that the application will undergo a significant review by the FDA. Thus, we believe that approval for the later part of the year is still a reasonable expectation. The last few months have been exciting for Profound. Our first quarter 2019 revenue, a greater than threefold increase compared to the same quarter a year ago and consistent with the previous quarter, is indicative of increasing interest in our TULSA-PRO and Sonalleve systems in Europe and Asia, respectively. We recently announced top-line results from our pivotal TULSA-PRO ablation clinical trial, or TACT, a trial designed to evaluate the safety and efficacy of TULSA-PRO's ablation of prostate tissue in patients with localized organ-confined prostate cancer. TACT enrolled 115 patients with biopsy-proven prostate cancer across 13 research sites in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. We were pleased to have Dr. Scott Eggener, chief investigator of the TACT study and director of the prostate cancer program at the University of Chicago, share the detailed results from TACT during the last breaking abstract presentation yesterday as part of the plenary session programming at the American Urological Association's 2019 annual meeting. We have just returned from the AUA conference today. Rather than going into a detailed review of the TACT trial's efficacy and safety endpoints, all of which were achieved and have been announced, I'd like to share with you what is resonating with the urology community in terms of the value drivers of TULSA-PRO. Number one is our ability to customize. That means our physicians can treat patients ranging from growth of a prostate causing benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH, to those with organ-confined cancer, whether it is a high-volume Gleason 6, or higher-stage disease. Our physicians can also treat radio-recurrent salvage cases and even palliative care patients. We're hearing words such as TULSA-PRO is a 2-in-1 or a 3-in-1 device. However, customization capability does not just mean being able to treat a variety of patients. It also means that the treatment of each individual can be personalized to what is appropriate. For example, we met a number of urologists at the AUA who saw this device as a potentially safer way to perform whole gland therapy. There were also others who saw TULSA-PRO performing a new kind of nerve-sparing whole gland therapy where they take out the nerve bundle region from the ablation region. Those looking to perform partial targeted ablation in particular see this as a way to bridge from whole gland to partial gland therapy. We also heard quite a bit about the predictability aspect of our technology. To some, this means fast overall treatment times. Indeed, users in Germany have started to demonstrate their ability to comfortably perform 4 procedures in a routine day. To others, it means 1 hour of catheter insertion and treatment planning, and a very comfortable second hour of treatment monitoring during which they can multitask, making it very predictable to plan their day. Predictability also means patient selection to some. They can visualize the diagnostic MR images of the patient and discern from that whether or not a patient would be a suitable candidate for TULSA. Similarly, during treatment, they can visualize the thermal coverage of the prostate and estimate the negative predictive value of the treatment. As we have talked about in the past, TULSA-PRO treated prostates shrink with time down to about 10% of their original size without any boiling or charring of the tissue. This outcome gives our physicians confidence that indeed they have treated the prostate. These are modern day tools that we believe will also be key to adoption of our technology. Finally, we are incision free. This is bigger than scar free or scar less treatment that uses a robot through a natural orifice and cuts tissue inside the body. When we say incision free, we mean minimal post-procedure pain and fast patient recovery. There is no incision to heal, either inside or outside. We believe that in addition to the efficacy and safety of TULSA-PRO, this will resonate particularly well with the patient population. Indeed, we're already seeing to that in our few sites in Europe. Another recently reported milestone for Profound was the hosting of our first analyst and investor day in New York, which featured presentations from current commercial TULSA-PRO users in Europe and key opinion leaders in the United States. We were honored to have renowned physicians to share their experience with TULSA-PRO, as well as their perspectives on an outlook of the system. Speakers included Dr. Christian Pavlovich, Director of Urologic Oncology at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center, Dr. Lawrence Klotz, Chair of Prostate Cancer Research at Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center, Dr. Steve Raymond, Director of at UCLA Prostate MR Imaging and Interventions, Dr. Ardan Lumiani, founder of Germany's Alta Clinic, and Dr. Peter Ostrom, Chief of Turku University Hospital's Department of Urology. In addition, Dr. Holger Gruhl, Department of Radiology Professor at the University Hospital of Cologne, and Dr. Karun Sharma, Director of Interventional Radiology at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences, shared their experience with perspectives on Sonalese. Finally, we were pleased to have Dr. Neil Cassell, founder and chairman of focused Ultrasound Foundation as our key speaker. The discussions and feedback regarding the potential of our products were extremely productive, particularly the first-hand experience physicians shared with us regarding the use of TULSA-PRO in both prostate cancer and BPH. With respect to the latter, one of our commercial sites in Europe first began treating BPH patients, particularly those whose prostates were too large for other treatment methodologies, in the third quarter of 2017. Fast forwarding to the first quarter of 2019, BPH cases represented approximately 30% of that same site TULSA-PRO procedures. Given our plans to commercialize our technologies in the United States, I'd like to talk about the market opportunities and commercialization plans for TULSA-PRO, assuming 510K marketing clearance is achieved. Based on figures provided by the American Cancer Society and CMS data, the total addressable new incidence market for TULSA is approximately 580,000 patients in Canada and the United States per year. These include new prostate cancer diagnosis and BPH cases that are candidates for treatment with TULSA-PRO. Assuming that the pre-reimbursement patient pay market is 5 to 10% of the total addressable market, and we add select international markets such as UK, Germany, and Japan, we estimate the total patient pay addressable market for TULSA-PRO is in the range of 43 to 87,000 patients per year. At the cost of approximately $4,000 per patient, the addressable new incidence market is an estimated 174 to 348 million per year. The prostate cancer market is rather unique because the already diagnosed active surveillance market represents an additional 5.5 million patients, assuming a pre-reimbursement market of 5% of that figure, we are looking at an addressable prevalence market of 55 million with just 5% market penetration.
5% of the 5%.
5% of the 5%, exactly. We are planning additional clinical studies to help drive adoption of and ultimately obtain reimbursement for TULSA-PRO, which has the potential to expand the total addressable market tenfold. While the exact details of these studies will be announced at a later date, we are generally planning to initiate them as follows. A 75 to 100-patient U.S.-based study in radio-recurrent cancer palliative care that we are looking to launch in H1 2020 with the purpose of securing inclusion in NCCN guidelines, a 200-plus patient study in focal/disease-targeted prostate cancer therapy with plan to launch in Europe first and then in the U.S. in 2020 to support adoption and reimbursement, a level one study of intermediate stage prostate cancer patients in the U.S. with the purpose of obtaining reimbursement. We are now in active discussions with the advisory board on this study now that TAC is complete. Finally, a level one trial in BPH patients that we are hoping to initiate in the first half of 2020 also. In summary, we're pleased with the momentum for TULSA-PRO and Sonalleve that we are gaining in Europe and Asia, respectively. We're looking forward to the FDA completing its substantive review of TULSA-PRO and granting pre-market clearance for the system. And we're looking forward to evolving to our market expanding clinical trial strategies, which will ultimately increase market access to TULSA-PRO. This ends our prepared remarks for today. With that, we're happy to take any questions you might have. Operator.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question comes from Jason Mills with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, Arun. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Good afternoon, Jason.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the questions, and congratulations on all the progress in the clinical data in the quarter and the beginning of the year. Lots of things to ask about. I'll try to limit myself to just a couple. First, you had a very comprehensive analyst meeting just a few weeks ago, and you went over a lot of information here on this call. Could you just level set all of us on this call and investors that want to go back and study what you said more comprehensively on your analyst meeting? Have you changed any timelines or changed anything with respect to your strategic thinking relative to the discussions you had at the analyst meeting? I think that'd be helpful as people use that analyst day material as a baseline for how to evaluate the company.
Absolutely, Justin. So there is really no difference between what we presented at the analyst day and what was in the prepared remarks today. So I think that's a great point. I think the presentations at the analyst day are a very good way to evaluate the strategies that we're pursuing.
Great. And then I understand you've got to wait for the FDA to finish its review. It's gratifying to hear you think that towards the end of this year is still in the cards. As you think about building the business in 2020, 2021, you went over a lot of the things that are resonating. I didn't catch all of them, but having done our own work, obviously the ability to do multiple procedures in a day and cutting down the procedure time is important as physicians try to build not only good outcomes for their patients, but build a business that they can sustain. So maybe talk about how the technology is resonating from a practice workflow standpoint, what you expect once you get to the point of commercialization, doctors to be doing per day, per se, and then also maybe give us some of your thoughts about how the commercialization will gate in the first, let's say, 4 to 6 quarters in terms of number of accounts you realistically think you can enter post FDA approval, let's say in the first 4 to 6 quarters, so we can get an idea of where you're going to put your focus. Thanks for taking the questions, Erin.
Sure, Jason, no problem. So so let's address the first question. I think that, I did, as I described, the number of things that are resonating. I guess one of the summaries of those is that this being a, as I said, 2-in-1 or 3-in-1 device, I think one of the things that's resonating is that they find that, this is a substantial change. This is a substantial system. And I think to me that also means that they're willing to invest their time and energy to learn something like this. And because they can do many different kinds of procedures, they don't have to do one type of procedure today and then another type tomorrow. We did hear things like, I do cryo sometimes, or I do cryo once month or two times a month, and have to bring someone from the company to help me because I do such few. Versus here, they're saying this could be a device I could use frequently. In terms of workflow, you know, I think you've heard this on the analyst day also, but we think that our goal is certainly to get them to four cases a day type workflow where they can allocate, you know, if they have two patients, they can allocate half a day a week. If they have four patients, they can allocate one day a week. And as a company, our goal is going to be to drive, you know, adoption from that perspective. And and then for the your question regarding the early first 6 months and early adoption, I think that our key is going to be to really it's going to be more about adoption at specific sites. So what we're thinking is we would start with maybe five sites. And we would like to make sure that they are up and running properly and trained. And then we'll grow that number to, you know, the second group or maybe another five. And then from that forward, we would like to grow logarithmically. And part of the idea is that we think that there are a number of the teaching sites, some of them have already publicly indicated that they will like to be the early adopters. But we also think that there are going to be a number of private clinics that have the patient pay model well established, that they will also be among the early adopters of this technology. So I kind of see this as a little bit of a bimodal distribution where some of the teaching sites will adopt, they will continue to do more clinical work, they will start educating the urology community, they will start educating their residents, and at the same time, there will be private centers which will then start to do some volume there. And as I said, our goal is going to be more focused on adoption, where will we place the device, and we want to be able to get to, you know, four patient per day type of goals. You know, it's not going to happen in one day, clearly, but that's our long term. That's how we will go get there.
Thank you, Arun, for that comment.
Our next question comes from Dr. Rahul Sarugaser with Paradigm Capital. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Hi, Arun. Hi, Aaron. Congratulations on the 510K application in particular, as well as the strong quarter, and thanks for taking my question. Arun, you mentioned that the 510K is moving to substantive review, and you referred to being a particularly significant review that would likely take close to the full 6 months. Could you please elaborate a little bit on why you believe that there's going to be such a deep review?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, in terms of clinical trial, this is a PMA level clinical trial, so they will go through a thorough review. And in terms of the technology, this is one of the very few, certainly first one in urology, where we're using an MRI and robotics and sophisticated software and, thermal heating and closed loop process control. So there's a lot of new in this. Now, I think what I said was that it's a substantial review. We're not concerned about any of it. We believe that our clinical data is obviously we've met all the endpoints, and we've worked with the FDA throughout, and our safety profile based upon the trial is pretty good. So on that basis, I think my only point is that given that so much of it is new, it is appropriate for FDA to go through a thorough review, and that could take a little bit longer than, normal.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you. And then just a second quick question then. We talked about the 510K, and you talked a lot about preparing for adoption come approval, hopefully late 2019. So assuming that there is this six-month period between now and then, what is it that investors can really expect in the next 6 months?
So I think, there are a number of milestones that we will continue to have. I think that I think with respect to preparing we will begin to look at our sales organization. We'll begin to look at first few sites that we would target. I think with respect to clinical, we will continue to have more data coming from the studies that are going on in Europe, and that will continue to hone our market entry strategy. We'll certainly, as we go forward with the clinical trials that I outlined, you will hear more about those. I think on the Sonalleve side, you will hear more about adoption and additional color on applications that we think will resonate not just in Asia, but also in the Western part of the world. So, yeah, I think expect to continue news in the second half of this year.
And I'd add some examples, Ro, that we'll add a couple of salespeople who are very focused, will be very focused on our first 5 to 10 placements. We'll add a couple of key marketing hires to drive patient-specific local marketing to drive patient demand into physicians' offices. We think that's super critical in a patient pay model, and we think very achievable here. We've heard this consistently from patients and seen it in Europe already, where patients come in and request the treatment as a treatment option instead of surgery or radiation or active surveillance. So really important hires there, and we'll be busy with that. Also, Arun referenced 4 clinical trials, and there's a lot of pre-work to be done in writing those protocols, getting feedback from advisory groups, recruiting sites. It will be a very, very busy 6 months.
That's great. Thanks so much for taking my questions, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Our next question comes from Ben Haynor with Alliance Global Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the questions.
Good afternoon, Ben.
First off, for me, on the clinical trials you outlined, do you have any thoughts on how the R&D expenditure is going to track for those? Is it going to be something, it looks like the last several years you kind of had about $10 million Canadian in R&D expenses every year. Should we expect that to continue, or will that tick up with the efforts that you're going to put forth there?
I'd expect it to be relatively consistent. Quarter to quarter, there'll be some variation as usual. I'd expect it to be relatively consistent in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, that's helpful. And then I apologize if I missed this, but the sales and distribution expense, you had the revenue share obligation reversal. How much was that reversal?
1.2 million Canadian, approximately.
1.2 million. Great. And then lastly for me, you mentioned in the prepared remarks or in the commentary that people were saying, this is a 2-in-1 or 3-in-1 device. Obviously you can use it to treat, different, disease states, but is there, and in different manners, is there, anything else in that kind of, 2-in-1 or 3-in-1 that maybe clinicians are looking at beyond those things, or how any more color you could provide there would be great.
Sure. I think, Ben, first and foremost, I think the safety profile of our device, they were quite pleased with. And I think, as you can imagine, these are surgeons, and the first thing they want to know is, what's the risk I'm putting my patient through. And I think it's because of the fact that the safety profile has been so strong that they're now, instead of saying, what's the risk, they're saying, what else can I do with it? And so, yeah, I do think that as time goes on, we had a big dinner last night with a number of these, and one of the conversations was that these are actually quite exciting times for urology, in fact, because when you look at the last several years, in terms of clinical outcomes, they're only they used to remove a prostate by hand 20 years ago. They removed the prostate with a robot today. But basically, that's from clinical outcomes, that's what they do. But now, there's this conversation, you know, we have an MRI now, and we can diagnose better, we can see the disease better, there's PSMA coming, which will be even more interesting for diagnostic purpose, and then an image-guided therapeutic platform coming that can not only, now they can not only diagnose, they can treat, the fact that they can do four cases, and they can be sitting, and I know in Europe, for example, the physicians sometimes during the treatment process may even leave the room to do other things because during treatment it's not just robotics, it's automation.
However, they do have other people in the room, like an MR tech watching.
Have MR tech. Right. Somebody's watching, but that flexibility aspect, I think there's a lot of conversation along these lines. And so we came back encouraged.
I think a large part of what we know today, Ben, is that when we put this in the hands of a physician, it's a surgical tool in their mind. And they use it for different things. As we've articulated before, we only develop the product with clinical data in intermediate stage cancer patients, prostate cancer patients. And lo and behold, physicians went and started using it in salvage, in palliative care, in large prostate BPH, and we won't be surprised if they use it in other ways. What the key is, the precision allows them the ability to contour and be very specific for whatever their use is. And that precision and flexibility is what's leading them to other uses. And we'll let the clinical community lead us, and then we'll help them develop clinical data to back up their inclinations.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Brian Gagnon with Gagnon Securities. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I have a few questions. We know it's incredibly early, but how are you feeling about the pipeline of centers coming away from AUA and all your discussions with docs?
Brian, certainly, we had 150 plus, I think that number of them, came across enthusiastic. I think, if I compared the reception to, other companies where we've introduced innovation, I would say we're conservatively optimistic overall.
Okay.
And I think that
we're not worried about number of places to install devices. We think, frankly, we could have far more placements than we're interested in supporting actively. We want to drive very high utilization into fewer sites because from a capital efficiency of our business model, we're heavily incented towards relatively modest numbers with very high volumes of cases. And so
we believe
there are a lot of centers who are interested, and we will be very selective in driving patients to the sites that will be high volume.
Okay. The training regime for doctors, now this is with one MR. Is it possible for the doctor to do more procedures per day if they had two MRs available to them? And what's the training regime going to be for these guys?
Yeah. So we, as part of the FDA file, we trained approximately 30 hospital systems. And, people were trained in about 6 hours. They had rigorous questions and rigorous tests the next day, and you know, we walked away quite encouraged with how quickly they were picking up the procedure. So I don't think that the initial training is going to be a difficult part. I think that, you know, it will still take them a few patients before they become comfortable in routine, but I think they will get up to speed pretty quickly. Your question regarding two MRs is very interesting because it did come up in some of the meetings, and, you know, I think that with a technology like this where you have automation, it is possible to do things like that. And I think right now we're thinking about four cases. You know, you could go to six if you do those things. I think at the moment those, you know, I think it's a little bit of a reach, but I think certainly long term, you know, these possibilities do exist.
And you said that one of your centers in Germany is routinely doing four a day?
Yeah, so this is like a routine German day, you know, with starting with, you know, 8:30 and a lunch break and finishing at 5. They're doing routinely four a day. And I think, to me, the interesting part of it is certainly not only the four is a good number, but the predictability that they can have, that they can actually schedule four, because the variability from one patient to the other is relatively small.
You know, and Brian, raises another point. One of the other pieces of feedback we've received from physicians about predictability is there's a whole other angle to predictability too. When a patient goes in for surgery, you know, they have to worry the next couple days about blood loss, about blood clots, about incision management, soft tissue recovery, and, you know, they can get calls in the night about bleeding and discomfort. One of the things that we've heard from physicians is they really like this. There's none of those concerns there. These patients don't have incisions. They don't have soft tissue injury, you know, in the abdominal muscles. There isn't, you're not going to get called at night for complications of, you know, a blood clot or the like. This is very predictable. This is a, you know, a procedure rather than a surgery in reality.
Yeah.
All right, my last question, and that's great. I mean, getting to 200 procedures per center at $4,000, that's $800,000 of revenue. That's not a question. Is it possible for a doc to do this procedure remotely, or at least view it remotely?
Okay, so the answer is stay tuned on that one.
Okay.
Future of medicine, but we're not there yet.
Stay tuned on that one.
Thank you. Congratulations, guys. Great job.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Our next question comes from Tim Ursich with Private Investor. Please go ahead. Tim, your line is open. Okay, there don't seem to be any further questions. I would like to turn the floor over to Dr. Menawat for closing comments.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your support. And we're looking forward to presenting the progress in the next quarter. Thank you. Good night.